Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning and welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase studio on North Michigan Avenue. Still a bit humid out there, so just watch things. And as Dave mentioned, chance for scattered showers, moderate risk of severe storms, so keep an eye on that this afternoon. Earlier in the show, I mentioned the fact that the news on Friday that after 6 months on the job that Sean Spicer had given up his position as White House press secretary. And The Daily Show on Comedy Central put together a compilation of Sean Spicer's greatest hits to mark his departure from the White House press room podium. So here is their send-off on Spicer's send-off.
Guys, good afternoon.
Good evening. Good afternoon.
This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period.
You're shaking your head. I appreciate it, but
with respect to, hold on 1 second.
You don't get to just yell out questions. We're going to raise our hand like big boys and girls.
Denmark as a education point. Points.
Bashar al-Assad. I know you've mispronounced his name a few times.
Hitler, who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons.
As many of you know. Okay, Jonathan, somebody's asking a question. It's not your press briefing.
Major, you want to come on up?
I'm just asking.
And with that, I'm glad to take some questions. Steve Holland.
Steve Holland's not here.
With that, David Jackson.
David is not here.
Eamon Javers. I will let the tweet speak for itself.
Yeah, I'm going to let the tweet speak for itself.
His tweets speak for themselves.
His tweets do speak for themselves.
I mean, that's the silliest thing I've ever heard. Okay, this is silly. Okay, next. Stop shaking your head again.
And see, that's how you ought to leave. Leave them wanting more. That's Comedy Central's mashup of Sean Spicer's greatest hits. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Democratic State Representative Anna Moeller from Elgin. And the representative was recently named a member of the new Community Care Program Services Task Force, which was part of the recent budget enactment. I won't say budget deal, but budget enactment. How about that? Representative, thank you so much for joining me here this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
I know this is an issue, the community care program is an issue you have been just overwhelmingly involved in. And part of it is because the governor had proposed a massive revamp of this program. And maybe you can explain what he was looking at and what we have the budget right now and what it does.
Sure. So our existing program that's been in place for about 30 years is the Community Care Program, and it provides services to seniors who would otherwise be eligible to go into a nursing home. So we're talking about frail elderly who need help with daily activities, going to the doctor, making sure they're taking their medications, that they're eating right, that they're bathing, general health and welfare of our seniors who are living in their homes. The Department of Aging and the Governor's Office last year proposed changing that program to the Community Reinvestment Program. They're characterizing it as providing more flexible services to seniors. Instead of providing a daily home care, making modifications to a senior's home or providing apps on their phone so that they can access transportation services.
I'm sorry, I snickered there. You couldn't, and this is no offense to the elderly, but this is not exactly a tech-savvy population.
Right. These are people who, if they were not receiving these services, would need to have 24-hour care in a nursing home. And so, yes, we were concerned with the proposed changes and the consequences that could come from these new flexible services, quote unquote, that the department was advocating for, in that it would result in seniors having to end up going into a more intensive nursing care facility.
And more costly.
And more costly.
I mean, that's the whole aim of the community care program, is that this is a less expensive alternative to nursing homes.
Absolutely, absolutely. Exponentially. We spend about $8,000 a year on seniors through the community care program. A full-time nursing facility, it's upwards of $30,000 a year. So we are saving money for taxpayers in the state and providing a higher quality of life. Most people want to stay in their homes if they're able to, with some assistance. We felt it going through, we had a number of hearings in the House Aging Committee, listening to AARP, the community care providers, people who work with seniors on a daily basis. And by and large, all of these organizations and groups were opposed to the changes that the department was proposing because of concerns that seniors would end up losing care and ending up, you know, becoming dependent on nursing facilities. It also became clear that the driver of this change was to cut $120 million initially out of the program. And while we're always looking for ways to save money and become more cost effective, we felt that putting that priority over the care of seniors, the care that is saving the state money long term, would be very short-sighted and end up affecting the quality of life of, we're talking about 40,000 seniors in the state, you know, who could be potentially affected by these changes. So we have taken a very close look at what the department is proposing. Another concern is that these changes are being proposed to go through an administrative rules process versus the entire General Assembly weighing in on such a dramatic change to a fundamental program here in Illinois. And as a result of the budget deal that was passed a couple weeks ago, a community care program task force was created in an attempt to show a good faith effort to look at the existing program and find ways to save and money and to make this program more efficient and more effective by bringing in the different stakeholder groups that provide care to seniors. Every program, you know, can withstand some scrutiny and can be improved, but we feel that anything that such sweeping changes really need to be made with the full input of all of the, you know, organizations that are providing care to seniors, with senior input and with input from the General Assembly before any changes are made.
We're speaking with Democratic State Representative Anna Moeller from Elgin. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Democratic State Representative Anna Moeller from Elgin. We're talking about the governor and his proposed changes to the community care program, which provides in-home services to elderly that require these services. The governor wants to change that into what he calls a community reinvestment program. Claims that there would be $120 million in savings as a result of this, but obviously there's concerns by all kinds of groups about what those changes might mean. Mm-hmm. And before the break, we were talking about the fact that he proposed doing this through what's known as the rulemaking process rather than through a legislative change. The budget, as enacted, continues to fund the current program. We have this task force to look at cost savings that where it can be done. Right. But the fact is, those rules that he has proposed to enact this other program mm-hmm. are still going through process and could be voted upon.
Right. That is our understanding, that they are moving forward with the rules process.
What does that mean? I mean, we know what's funded is the current program.
Right.
If they change the rules,
then there is no funding for the new program, the community reinvestment program. And so there is a little bit of uncertainty if JCAR were to enact these rules.
The Joint Committee on Administrative Rules.
Exactly. What the ending result would be, if it would automatically revert back to the CCP program, which is funded in the budget, or if there would be some type of legislation that would be required, or reversal of the JCAR rules that would be required if the CRP were approved through JCAR.
I mean, is it possible that if the rules are enacted and there's no funding for the program under that, but we have an existing program that is being funded, but if the rules get enacted, that supersedes, and then there is no funding for anybody for those seniors?
Yeah, and I think all members of JCAR should be cognizant of the fact that this is, that we have funding in the budget for the existing program. Let's work through this task force that's been created. It's a bicameral, bipartisan task force.
Representatives from the governor.
Representatives from the governor's office, representatives from all of the different stakeholder groups who serve seniors on a daily basis. Let's work through that process so that we can find savings and improvements to the current program.
And that's not to say that the task force won't look at some of these issues that were being looked at under the governor's program as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely. But this will be a more open, transparent, and inclusive process. And in an expedited process, the task force is assigned with coming up with recommendations by the end of January. So it's not something that we can sit on for a year before we come out with our proposals for the current program. So I think that would be a better process. And I would hope that the governor and the Department of Aging would recognize that, recognize the realities of the fact that we have funding in this budget for the current program. Put seniors' minds at ease that their current services that they're provided right now will not change. That's been part of the consternation over the past year, as a lot of seniors, a lot of organizations that provide care are not sure how long these services will last because of the department's proposed changes. And this is a vulnerable population, and they need some assurance that the care that they're getting, the care providers who are providing the services to them, who come into their homes, that they, people they trust and who have provided their services, are going to be there for them. I think it would serve all parties well to have that assurance that we're going to continue what we're doing right now and look at ways to make it better for the future.
I think I would ask you to sponsor a resolution to change the state slogan from Land of Lincoln to Illinois, a state of uncertainty. And speaking of uncertainty, I'm going to shift to another topic here.
Yes.
Senate Bill 1. That's right. The education state aid formula funding bill. I spoke last hour with Hal Dardick from the Tribune's political team.
Yeah.
As he and my colleague Kim Geiger took a look last week at the various claims on both sides. We have the governor out there saying, it's a Chicago bailout for Chicago public schools, that he would veto that language out. He hasn't gotten the bill yet. He set a deadline of Monday, or he would call the legislature into special session.
Right.
Questions about what that really would accomplish.
Yeah.
But you have the governor traveling largely through downstate communities, raising this as a bailout for Chicago public schools, yet just, and I'll admit this is anecdotal, but in looking on social media, on my Twitter feed, you have the governor claiming that all of these school superintendents throughout the state, Mike Madigan's put a gun to their head, and that's why they're saying they support this legislation that's passed. But you've got the superintendent saying, "I've never talked to Mike Madigan. I just, this is a bill that is passed the legislature."
Yeah.
And most schools get more money out of this.
Right. Every school is at least held harmless under Senate Bill 1. Most school districts get additional funding. I know U46, the second largest school district in the state and the largest school district in my district, supports Senate Bill 1. They would receive additional funding under the bill, which is a good thing. We have a high poverty population in U46, and we have a lot of students with special needs. This new formula would address that and provide greater equity for school districts that have students who need additional help. All of the superintendents I've talked to support Senate Bill 1. They recognize this is the bill that passed both chambers. It was negotiated with Republicans and Democrats. And this is the most realistic path forward right now. The governor has said he agrees with 90% of the bill. and yet he still plans to veto it. And you know, it's disconcerting that when you get 90% of something, you're still going to oppose it. That's not how compromise works.
Well, and when you're looking, you know, with his desire for a property tax freeze, we know how everybody hates property taxes.
Sure.
And but also that's the primary method of funding public schools in this state. And until we radically change our tax system in this state, if we ever do, that's the way it's going
right.
to be. But now you have a formula that, now they argue that, well, the money that would be for Chicago, the quote bailout money, that would be rolled into their formula, the Republican alternative formula, and that would mean even more money for schools, and that mm-hmm. this is Chicago taking away from other school districts.
We haven't seen that new formula. The governor has not unveiled that new formula. So it's hard to analyze against what we currently know in Senate Bill 1. Over 200 school districts get more funding per pupil in Senate Bill 1 than the city of Chicago. All school districts benefit under this. We can't continue, and because prior school funding formula bills have failed is because we're playing, we're pitting one school district against another.
Right. It was always the list was, let's see the winners and let's see the
right.
losers. And traditionally, the losers were suburban school districts.
Right, right. And that's not the case under Senate Bill 1. Suburban school districts support Senate Bill 1, even with the funding for Chicago public schools. They recognize that all school districts need to benefit under this, under whatever formula we're going to enact. And this is the best formula, the best bill that we've seen come out of that work in many years. And for a governor to claim that he agrees with 90% of the bill and yet still plans to veto it with schools set to open here in a month is very troubling. And I don't know what a special session would do. Special sessions are very expensive. I would hope that any concerns that he has with the existing bill, he would sit down with leadership in the House and the Senate to work that out instead of calling a special session, dubious results coming from that.
Knowing that the Speaker does not really consider amendatory vetoes, and that's been true regardless of party. That's just the way. So that means you either would have to vote to accept whatever changes the governor makes. And that's something people have been asking is what's the language that you're going to want to change here, or overriding that veto.
Right.
Do you think there are the votes in the House to override?
Well, I think there's a question as to the legality of an amendatory veto on Senate Bill 1. So that's been called into question if he can even if his only option is to a total veto. Or signing it. There's still questions as to whether he can amendatorily veto it because it's not an appropriations bill. I don't know if there would be the votes for if he's going to be carving out Chicago, the funding for Chicago. I don't imagine there are going to be a lot of Chicago legislators who are going to be able to support a bill that takes money away from their students.
I mean, I just wonder if it gets to the point that if it's, you know, this is about the public funding of public schools, that as we saw with some Republicans crossing over to enact a budget, the pressures that legislators individually may face in
right.
their districts were they to allow schools not to open because
yeah.
of a lack of money.
Well, and that just speaks to this entire, what we've experienced over the last couple of years. It should never come down to this crisis situation on every issue. There should be the ability to sit down and talk and compromise and work out an agreement. To hold things up, to wait until the last minute, to continue to demand 100% on all issues before you will agree to sign off on a budget, to sign off on school funding, is just the wrong way to govern. It's as you said, we're in the state of uncertainty because of this approach. I would hope for a more rational style of governance where we can sit down and talk about our differences and not wait until the last minute and force a crisis so that the entire state is being held hostage to a political agenda that, quite frankly, keeps changing.
Remember what I said? Illinois, a state of uncertainty. Make a great bumper sticker, wouldn't it? That's Democratic State Representative Anna Mueller from Elgin. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
We'll be back with more right after this.